welcome to this reading of the Sioux City Journal for Friday, December 8th. I'm your reader, Mark Bedford. We'll start with the weather. Today, it'll be turning cloudy and mild with a high of 54 degrees. Tonight will be cloudy and breezy late with a low of 30 degrees. Saturday will be colder with a little AM snow and a high of 36 degrees. And now we switch over to local and state news. Parks and Rec staff preparing Cone Park. The Sioux City attraction is opening for a seventh season. Dolly A. Butch reports from Sioux City. Last week, Sioux City Parks and Recreation staff began making snow at Cone Park in preparation for the all-season park's seventh winter season. Recreation Superintendent John Burns said their goal is to have the main tubing hill at the park at 3800 Line Drive open for Christmas break, if the weather allows it. With high temperatures expected to climb into the upper 50s this week, the weather could throw a wrench into those plans. A lot of these temps are right on the line. We need about 26 degrees, give or take, to make snow, Burns said. We're full steam ahead. If we can make snow, we're going to be making it. On average, Burns said there's 3 feet of snow over the main slope and 10 to 15 feet at the bottom of the hill. It only takes about 4 24-hour periods to get all of the snow we need to open up. After that, everything is just adding, or for aesthetics, he said. Blue Bunny Hill, a shorter hill designed for people of all ages, usually opens around the same time as the main tubing hill, but Burns stressed the main hill is the priority. So typically, we're able to open those really close to each other. We do build out the main hill first, and then the Wells Blue Bunny Hill is the next thing that we build out, he said. Snow tubing fees are increasing for the first time in the park's history, after the City Council approved a proposal to raise admission by $3 for the upcoming season. Tubers will pay $10 or $15 depending on the day of the week. Reduced rates for low-income families will continue to be offered. For more information on admission fees and park hours, visit conepark-siouxcity.com. Last year, the park recorded record attendance, 29,059 visitors, as well as record revenue of $346,003. However, operating expenses have increased as infrastructure at the park, which opened in 2017, ages. The increase puts Cone Park's admission rate in line with what other parks in the Midwest charge for snow tubing. Cone Park's competitors, which include Great Bear Ski Valley in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Seven Oaks Recreation in Boone, Iowa, and Mount Cato in Mankato, Minnesota, charge between $16 and $25 for 2 hours tubing sessions. Cone Park sessions are 3 hours. Cone Park was awarded the Outstanding Attraction honor from the Iowa Tourism Bureau and the Travel Federation of Iowa in 2019. In addition to the main tubing hill and Blue Bunny Hill, visitors can also skate on a refrigerated 5,400 square foot ice skating rink and warm up around the fire pit and in the park's day lodge with a cup of hot chocolate and some snacks. Summer tubing made its debut at Cone Park in June 2022. Two lanes of plastic-type track on the main hill, which act like snow, are installed on the hill at the beginning of the summer season and removed before snowmaking begins. The park will become a destination for mountain biking when 10.5 miles of sustainably constructed single-track shared-use and bike-only trails are completed at Cone Park next spring. The Parks and Recreation Department broke ground on the nearly $3 million project in August. Sioux City man charged with Sunday night murder. From Sioux City. Sioux City police have arrested a Sioux City man, charging him with a murder that took place Sunday night. Farron Allen Starr, 38, was charged in the fatal shooting of 31-year-old Nathaniel John Parker, III. At around 11:58 p.m. Sunday, police responded to a call of shots fired in the 500 block of 9th Street. At the scene, they discovered Parker with a single gunshot wound. He was pronounced dead at the scene. Starr was arrested on a first-degree murder charge without incident Wednesday. Sioux City Police stopped a vehicle he was in at 7:40 p.m., according to a statement from Community Policing Sergeant Tom Gill. Starr is being held at the Woodbury County Jail in lieu of $1.1 million bond. According to the Woodbury County Attorney's Office, Parker was staying in an upstairs apartment on 9th Street on Sunday when, shortly before midnight, he was fatally shot in the chest. A female eyewitness that had been present in the apartment with Nathaniel Parker III told police that, prior to Nathaniel Parker III being shot, someone had knocked at the door to apartment 15 and she heard a male arguing with Nathaniel Parker III about money. Shortly thereafter, the female eyewitness heard a gunshot. After hearing the gunshot, Nathaniel Parker III fell backward, the complaint and affidavit from the Woodbury County Attorney's Office states. In November 2022, Starr pleaded not guilty of stabbing his ex-girlfriend. He is scheduled to stand trial in Woodbury District Court in February 2024 on charges of willful injury, second-degree burglary, going armed with intent, third offense domestic abuse assault, and two counts of being a felon in possession of a firearm. In March 2014, Starr was sentenced to 2 years in prison for aggravated assault. According to court documents, a bench warrant was filed for Starr on October 25th in connection with the stabbing case. Gill said police were also able to locate Nathaniel Irwin Frazier and Amanda Lynn Hayes, who are described as persons of interest. Frazier, 39, was booked into the Woodbury County Jail on Wednesday. He had two charges for third-degree burglary and criminal mischief in the second degree. Frazier remains in the Woodbury County Jail with a $20,000 bond. On November 7th, a Woodbury County jury found Parker guilty of assault causing bodily injury for the February 24th death of William Harlan Jr., a Sioux City man who was fatally stabbed in the back seat of a car Parker was riding with him in. In that case, Parker faced a first-degree murder charge, which carries an automatic mandatory sentence of life in prison without parole, but instead was found guilty of the lesser assault charge, which carries a one-year jail sentence. Hours after being released, Parker was booked into the Woodbury County Jail early on November 8th on a charge of public intoxication, a simple misdemeanor. He pleaded guilty and received a one-day suspended jail sentence. District Judge Jeffrey Neary sentenced Parker to probation for the stabbing on November 21st. Parker received credit for 221 days served in jail while awaiting trial and had a one-year jail sentence on a charge of assault causing bodily injury suspended. For a related drug possession charge, Neary sentenced Parker to 30 days in jail and credited him for time served while placing him on probation for 1 year. First phase of Plywood Trail nearing completion. From Sioux City. The first phase of a 16-mile trail that will run through rural Plymouth and Woodbury counties is nearing completion. Paving of the Plywood Trail from Merrill to Lamar's is almost finished, according to a statement from the Plywood Trail Foundation. This section of the trail includes two water crossings and one major bridge structure. While we were hoping the paving would be completed in early fall, we're extremely excited that it is close to completion, said Ryan Schapp, executive director of the Plywood Trail Foundation. There are a few driveways and handwork locations that still need to be completed, and we anticipate these will be finished in the next few weeks as weather allows. The statement said the first phase of the trail is not rideable, as substantial completion will not be issued until spring 2024, due to the need for backfill and seeding around the trail. The Plywood Trail Foundation intends to hold a ribbon cutting for the trail in the spring. The statement said design work for the third phase of the project, Hinton to Sioux City, is also nearing completion. The City of Sioux City is coordinating with utility companies and working to obtain all necessary permits for the trail. April 2024 is being targeted as the letting date, with construction stage between 2024 and 25. Next year, the foundation plans to begin fundraising and applying for grants for the second phase of the project, Merrill to Hinton. Named after the two counties it connects, the Plywood Trail will run parallel with Highway 75. The trail, which is estimated to cost $18 million, will provide a transportation link for cyclists and pedestrians alike. It will be the largest trail on the western side of Iowa. Santa Claus has come to town. RE/MAX City Center is showing holiday movies in theater. Caitlin Yamada reports from Sioux City. Santa and the Grinch have visited downtown Sioux City the last few weeks to watch some holiday classic movies while visiting with attendees. The RE/MAX City Center has been hosting a series of Christmas movies on Sundays in the remodeled Riviera Theater. Holiday characters such as Santa and the Grinch have been visiting to take photos with attendees. Jeff Carlson said Christmas is the best time of the year for him and his family, so they wanted to create a series that brings the community together in the downtown area. With popcorn, hot chocolate, holiday-themed drinks, holiday music, and pictures with Santa, the RE/MAX City Center is creating a Christmas Day environment each weekend. Carlson said the events are an affordable way for families to see holiday movies and celebrate the Christmas season. It's not just about coming to the movie, it's about experiencing it together, he said. The series was created from a partnership between the RE/MAX Experience, Jensen Subaru, and For Siouxland. Every Sunday, beginning November 26th through the Sunday before Christmas, December 17th, the remodeled Riviera Theater is showing holiday movies such as The Grinch, Elf, Home Alone, and It's a Wonderful Life. Doors open at 1 p.m. to give time for snacks and photos before the movies start at 1:30 p.m. Tickets are $3 and include popcorn and water. Other treats are available for purchase. The partnership with Jensen Subaru allows the events to be affordable for families, Carlson said. A portion of the proceeds also go to nonprofits in Sioux City. What an awesome combination, he said, being able to create events that the community can enjoy, they can come together and have a blast, but also impact nonprofits in our city. The first day of the event, showing The Grinch, sold out with more than 200 people in attendance. Carlson said the showing of Elf was close to 200 as well. The series will also include a sensory-friendly showing of Home Alone at 4 p.m. this Sunday. The event will have dimmed theater lights instead of it being completely dark. The movie volume will be lower. Audience members are welcome to move around and fidget. And fidgets and noise-canceling headphones will be provided. The event is in partnership with Unlimited, a Sunnybrook Church group designed to provide support for individuals with special needs. Other upcoming showings include 1:30 p.m. this Sunday, Home Alone, 4 p.m. this Sunday, sensory-friendly Home Alone, 1:30 p.m. on December 17th, Elf, and 3:45 p.m. on December 17th, It's a Wonderful Life. Carlson hopes to hold the movie series every year and have the RE/MAX City Center become a downtown Christmas center. And finally, the Little Yellow Dog Auction is coming. The Ancient and Effervescent Order of the Little Yellow Dogs will host the Little Yellow Dog Auction at noon Saturday in the atrium of the Ho-Chunk Center at 614 4th Street to raise funds for the Sioux City Journal's Goodfellow Charities. This year's Little Yellow Dog is Nixon, a 5.8-pound black-and-white Bernedoodle, who was donated by Pat and Karen Kuhl and named after the late Dave Nixon Sr., a longtime Sioux City TV news anchor and Little Yellow Dog auction MC. Started by a Journal reporter in 1914, Goodfellow Charities is one of Siouxland's oldest charities. The Little Yellow Dog Auction is free for the public to attend and is also being live-streamed on the Sioux City Journal's website. And now we turn to national and world news stories. Judge allows an abortion. Doctors say pregnancy threatens woman's ability to be a mother. From Austin, Texas. A Texas judge on Thursday gave a pregnant woman whose fetus has a fatal diagnosis permission to get an abortion in an unprecedented challenge over bans that more than a dozen states have enacted since Roe v. Wade was overturned. A lawsuit by Kate Cox, a 31-year-old mother of two from the Dallas area, is believed to be the first time since the landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision last year that a woman asked a court to approve an abortion. The order only applies to Cox, and her attorneys warned it is unfeasible that scores of other women seeking abortions would also turn to courts. "This can't be the new normal," said Mark Heron, an attorney for the Center for Reproductive Rights. "I don't think you can expect to see, now, hundreds of cases being filed on behalf of patients. It's just not realistic." State District Judge Maya Guerra Gamble, an elected Democrat, granted a temporary restraining order allowing Cox to have an abortion under what are narrow exceptions to Texas' ban. Her attorney said they would not disclose what Cox planned to do next, citing safety concerns. Republican Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, whose office argued that Cox does not meet the criteria for a medical exception, issued a statement that did not say whether the state would appeal. But in a letter to three Houston hospitals, Paxton warned that legal consequences were still possible if Cox's physician provides an abortion. Cox, who is 20 weeks pregnant, attended the hearing via Zoom with her husband, but did not address the court. Doctors have told Cox that if the baby's heartbeat were to stop, inducing labor would carry a risk of a uterine rupture because of her prior cesarean sections, and another C-section at full term would endanger her ability to carry another child. The idea that Ms. Cox wants so desperately to be a parent, and this law may have her lose that ability, is shocking and would be a genuine miscarriage of justice, Gamble said. Since Roe v. Wade was overturned, Texas and 12 other states rushed to ban abortion at almost all stages of pregnancy. Opponents seek to weaken those bans. "I do not want to continue the pain and suffering that has plagued this pregnancy or continue to put my body or my mental health through the risks of continuing this pregnancy," Cox wrote in an editorial published in the Dallas Morning News. "I do not want my baby to arrive in this world only to watch her suffer." Palestinians cut off with little aid. Airstrikes continue to pound southern Gaza during Israeli offensive. From Deir al-Balah in the Gaza Strip. Desperation grew Thursday among Palestinians largely cut off from supplies of food and water as Israeli forces engaged in fierce urban battles with Hamas militants. Strikes in the southern Gaza town of Rafah sowed fear in one of the last places where civilians could seek refuge. United Nations officials say there are no safe places in Gaza almost a week after Israel widened its offensive into the southern half of the territory. Heavy fighting in and around the city of Khan Yunis displaced tens of thousands of people and cut most of Gaza off from aid deliveries. More than 80% of the territory's population already fled their homes. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres used a rarely exercised power to warn the Security Council of an impending humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza and urged members to demand a ceasefire. Arab and Islamic nations called for a vote Friday on a draft council resolution demanding a humanitarian ceasefire. Guterres explicitly cited Article 99 of the UN Charter, which allows the Secretary General to bring any matter that he believes threatens international peace and security to the Council's attention. The power has only been used a handful of times in the history of the world body. The United States, Israel's closest ally, appears likely to block any UN effort to halt the fighting. Still, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Thursday casualties are still too high. In a call with Israeli Minister of Strategic Affairs Ron Dermer, a senior State Department official said, "Israel says it must crush Hamas's military capabilities and remove it from power following the October 7th attack that ignited the war. In photos and video published Thursday, at least 100 Palestinian men are seen sitting in rows on a street in northern Gaza, stripped down to their underwear with their heads bowed as they are being guarded by Israeli troops." The Al Arabi Al Jahid news outlet said its correspondent, Dia Al Kalut, was among those detained and had been taken to an unknown location. Israeli military spokesman Daniel Hagari said Israeli troops detained and interrogated hundreds of people in Gaza suspected of militant links. Trump appeals ruling, saying he's not immune. Former president also shows up at fraud trial to watch testimony. From Washington. Former President Donald Trump appealed a ruling that found he is not immune from criminal prosecution as he runs out of opportunities to delay or derail an upcoming trial on charges that he plotted to overturn the results of the 2020 election. Lawyers for the 2024 Republican presidential primary frontrunner filed a notice of appeal Thursday, indicating that they will challenge U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan's decision, rejecting Trump's bid to dismiss the case headed to trial in Washington, D.C. in March. The one-page filing, the first step in a process that could potentially reach the Supreme Court in the months ahead, was accompanied by a request from the Trump team to freeze deadlines in the case while the appeals court considers the matter. Meanwhile, Trump returned to his civil fraud trial Thursday to spotlight his defense, renewing his complaints that the case is baseless. With testimony winding down after more than 2 months, Trump showed up to watch New York University accounting professor Eli Bartov, whom his lawyers hired to give expert perspective. House censures member for tripping fire alarm. Vote is the most recent example of chaos and infighting in Congress. From Washington. House members voted again Thursday to punish one of their own, targeting Democratic Representative Jamal Bowman for triggering a fire alarm in a U.S. Capitol office building when the chamber was in session. The Republican censure resolution passed with a few Democratic votes, but most of his party stood by Bowman in opposition of an effort they said lacked credibility and integrity. The prominent progressive is the third Democratic House member to be admonished this year through the censure process, which is a punishment one step below expulsion from the House. The 214-191 vote to censure Bowman, a Democrat from New York, caps almost a year of chaos and retribution in the House of Representatives. Since January, the chamber has seen the removal of a member from a committee assignment, the first ouster of a speaker in history, and just last week, the expulsion of a lawmaker for only the third time since the Civil War. Bowman pleaded guilty in October to a misdemeanor count for the incident, which took place in the Cannon House office building. He agreed to pay a $1,000 fine and serve 3 months of probation. Las Vegas shooter had list of targets, police say. From Las Vegas. The 67-year-old gunman, who killed three faculty members and wounded a fourth at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, had a list of targets at the school and over 150 additional rounds of ammunition, police said Thursday. Clark County Sheriff Kevin McMahill identified the suspect, who was killed in a shootout with police the prior day, as Anthony Polito, a longtime business professor living in Henderson, Nevada. The sheriff said investigators were still looking into a motive, but noted Polito applied for jobs at colleges and universities in Nevada but was denied a job. McMahill said targets on Polito's list included faculty members at East Carolina University in North Carolina, where Polito was a professor from 2001 to 2017. None of the individuals on the target list became a victim, McMahill said. Polito mailed 22 letters to university faculty members across the U.S. before the shooting, McMahill said, and at least one envelope contained a white powder. Last pair sentenced in governor kidnap plot. A judge handed down the last sentences Thursday in a plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, the climax to an investigation that produced mixed results in court. Whitmer, a Democrat, was targeted as part of a broad effort by anti-government rebels who were hoping to trigger a civil war around the time of the 2020 election, investigators said. Her COVID-19 policies, which shut down schools and restricted the economy, disgusted her critics. Sean Fix of suburban Detroit was sentenced to 3 years in state prison after pleading guilty to providing material support for terrorism. Brian Higgins of Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin, was sentenced to probation for 3 years for scouting Whitmer's vacation home with a camera rigged to his pickup truck. Capital riot. Alan Hostetter, a former California police chief, convicted of a conspiracy charge in the January 6, 2021 U.S. Capitol riot, was sentenced Thursday to more than 11 years in prison after spinning conspiracy theories and praising Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy's suggestion the riot could have been an inside job. Drug prices. The Biden administration announced a plan Thursday to consider overriding patents for high-priced drugs developed with the help of taxpayer money and letting competitors make versions in hopes of driving down prices. Russia. Members of the Federation Council, Russia's upper house of parliament, voted unanimously Thursday to set the country's 2024 presidential election for March 17th, moving Vladimir Putin closer to a fifth term. Diplomacy. Chinese and European Union leaders held talks Thursday, focusing on disputes over trade, subsidies, and the war in Ukraine. Formula. Bacteria that sparked formula recalls and shortages last year infected two babies this year, killing a Kentucky child and causing brain damage in a Missouri infant, federal health officials confirmed Thursday. Still, they said there is no broader public health concern. And finally, New York. Former U.S. Representative Tom Suozzi will be the Democratic nominee in next year's special election to replace ousted Republican Representative George Santos, New York Democrats announced Thursday. Race to the White House. Clinching nomination is all about delegates. How does that work? Robert Yoon reports. By now, Americans should be well aware that the process of electing a president isn't like electing a senator or governor. That's especially true during the presidential primaries, when the major political parties use a complex and decentralized system to pick their nominees to compete in November. That complicated process was highlighted in the nomination plans released by the Republican National Committee, which lays out numerous ways in which states will assign the delegates that a candidate must accumulate to win the party's nod to become its presidential candidate in 2024. Although voters across the country cast ballots for their preferred presidential candidate during the presidential primary season, it's actually the delegates to the national party conventions who select the nominees for each major party, much like in the general election, where a candidate needs a majority of votes in the Electoral College to win the White House. In the primaries, candidates need a majority of delegate votes at the convention to win the party's presidential nomination. Winning the popular vote in a primary or caucus may give a candidate bragging rights and media attention, but it's the candidate who accumulates a majority of delegates who ultimately advances to the general election. Here are the basics about the delegate selection process that you should know as the primary campaign gets underway in just a few weeks. What is a delegate? In the context of presidential elections, delegates are individuals who represent their state or community at their party's presidential nominating convention. These delegates choose a presidential candidate to represent the national party in the November general election. They also approve the party's platform and adopt rules governing the party. Delegates tend to be party insiders or activists or early supporters of a particular presidential candidate. How many delegates are there? Both the Democratic and Republican national conventions will feature thousands of delegates representing all 50 states, plus the District of Columbia and several U.S. territories. Democrats will have about 3,900 voting delegates for the first ballot at the convention and more than 4,600 for subsequent rounds of voting, if necessary. Republicans will have 2,429 delegates voting at the convention. What kinds of delegates are there? Delegates can be divided into two broad categories, pledged and unpledged, as Democrats call them, or bound and unbound, as Republicans call them. Pledged and bound delegates must vote for a particular presidential candidate at the convention based on the results of the primary or caucus in their state. These are the delegates who are up for grabs on any given primary or caucus night. The requirement to vote for a specific candidate lasts at least through the first round of voting at the convention. But depending on state and party rules, some pledged and bound delegates become free to vote for any candidate on subsequent rounds of voting. Pledged and bound delegates can be further divided into at-large delegates and district delegates. At-large delegates represent the entire state, while district delegates represent specific districts within the state, usually congressional districts, but sometimes state legislative districts. Democrats have an additional type of pledged delegate that Republicans do not, party leaders and elected officials, or PLEOs. These tend to be notable local elected and party officials, though not governors or members of the U.S. Senate or House. Unpledged and unbound delegates may support any presidential candidate regardless of the primary or caucus results in their state or local district. On the Democratic side, unpledged delegates may not vote on the first ballot in a closely contested race, but are free to vote for any candidate in subsequent rounds of voting. Democrats adopted this rule after the 2016 election in order to limit the power of unpledged delegates, formerly known as superdelegates. All Democratic governors, U.S. senators and representatives, current and former Democratic National Committee chairs, and former presidents serve as unpledged delegates. For Republican delegates from Guam, Montana, New Mexico, and South Dakota will be unbound and free to vote for the candidate of their choice, according to the plans released recently. How does a candidate win delegates? Candidates win delegates in a state based on their performance in an election or some type of presidential preference event, usually a primary or a caucus. But the two major parties have vastly different approaches in determining exactly how delegates are allocated to candidates. Once again, you are listening to this reading of the Sioux City Journal for Friday, December 8th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now these stories in national sports. In the NFL, Pats snap skid. Zapp throws for 3 touchdowns as New England damages Pittsburgh's playoff hopes. Will Graves reports from Pittsburgh. Bailey Zapp threw 3 first-half touchdown passes, and the New England Patriots snapped a 5-game skid while damaging the playoff hopes of the Pittsburgh Steelers with a 21-18 victory on Thursday night. Zapp passed for 240 yards in his second start for the Patriots, who are at 3-10, who became the second 2-win team in 5 days to hand the Steelers, who are at 7-6, a potentially season-altering loss at home. Hunter Henry had 2 touchdown catches for New England. Ezekiel Elliott had 140 yards from scrimmage, 72 receiving, 68 rushing, and caught a touchdown for the NFL's lowest scoring offense, which reached the end zone 3 times for the first time since October. Juju Smith-Schuster added 90 yards receiving against the team he starred for earlier in his career. Mitch Trubisky completed 22 of 35 for 190 yards, passing for a touchdown and running for another while filling in for injured Steelers starter Kenny Pickett. Trubisky also threw an ill-advised pass in the first half that was picked off to set up the first of Henry's 2 scores, and he inexplicably threw deep to a well-covered Deontay Johnson on 4th-and-2 at midfield with just under 2 minutes left. Pittsburgh got the ball back with 15 seconds remaining, but had no realistic chance to score. The Steelers managed 264 yards of offense, another step back for a group that briefly seemed on the verge of getting it together after offensive coordinator Matt Canada's firing before Thanksgiving. Pittsburgh piled up 421 yards the following week at Cincinnati, but the offense regressed in Sunday's loss to Arizona. The Patriots, 5 days removed from a shutout loss to the Chargers, in which they failed to reach the red zone, let alone the end zone, looked far sharper against a team that stressed it wouldn't overlook another also-ran. It happened again anyway. Zapp guided the Patriots to their first opening drive touchdown of the season when he hit Elliott in the flat and the running back raced in from 11 yards out. Two plays after Jabril Pepper stepped in front of Trubisky's pass into triple coverage, Zapp found Hurst in the back of the end zone to give the Patriots their biggest lead of the season. The advantage swelled to 21-3 two possessions later, when Hurst made a diving grab at the goal line for a 24-yard score that had some in the black-clad crowd chanting for backup quarterback Mason Rudolph, who has been buried on the bench for the last 2 years. The switch to Rudolph never came, and while Trubisky got the Steelers within striking distance behind a 25-yard touchdown pass to Johnson late in the second quarter and a 1-yard sneak with 11 minutes 44 seconds to play that brought Pittsburgh within three, it wasn't enough. In other NFL games, Jaguars. Jacksonville quarterback Trevor Lawrence returned to practice in a limited capacity Thursday, taking another step toward playing at Cleveland despite a high ankle sprain. No questions. Buffalo edge rusher Von Miller declined to take questions at his locker on Thursday, a week after turning himself into police in a Dallas suburb after allegedly assaulting the mother of his children, who is pregnant. Miller simply shook his head no and said not today when approached by reporters. Retirement. Longtime NFL kicker Robbie Gould is retiring following an 18-year career that established him as one of the game's best in the clutch. Gould announced his retirement on the Players' Tribune Thursday. Broncos. Running back Javonte Williams has provided an offensive identity to Denver, one that many expected wouldn't happen until 2024 because of the complex right knee injury he sustained a month into the 2022 season. Williams was selected as the Broncos' Ed Block Courage Award recipient on Thursday for the work he put in to make his comeback. Jets. Zach Wilson was benched to try to spark the offense. Two games later, there's still barely a flicker. So Wilson is back as New York starter again, and he'll be under center Sunday when the Jets take on Houston. And now here's some stories from the NBA. Halliburton helps Pacers beat Bucks, advance to title game. From Las Vegas. Tyrese Halliburton hit his third three-pointer with less than a minute left, pounded his chest, and looked down at his wrist to let everyone know one thing. It's our time. Halliburton had 27 points and 15 assists, and the Indiana Pacers beat the Milwaukee Bucks 128-119 to advance to the championship game in the NBA's inaugural in-season tournament. We're playing the right way, and we're shocking the world right now. We're going to continue to do that, Halliburton said. And as long as we play the right way, we know we're going to be in every basketball game. Miles Turner added 26 points for Indiana. Obi Toppin had 14 points on 6 of 8 shooting. Isaiah Jackson chipped in 11, and Bruce Brown scored 10. The Pacers are averaging a whopping 132.6 points during the tournament. Overall, they are averaging 128.3 this season, 131.7 over the last 14 games. Giannis Antetokounmpo had 37 points and 10 rebounds for Milwaukee. Damian Lillard scored 24 points, Chris Middleton added 20, and Brooke Lopez netted 18. Most important, however, was Indiana's reserves outscoring Milwaukee's backups, 43-13. Indiana's bench was a combined plus 62, while Milwaukee's reserves were minus 46. Yeah, our bench really was the difference in today's game, Pacers coach Rick Carlisle said. If you look at the plus-minus, it's pretty obvious that those guys played a major role. Lakers 133, Pelicans 89. LeBron James scored 30 points in less than three quarters, and Los Angeles steamrolled New Orleans in Las Vegas to reach the title game. By halftime, James had 21 points on 7 of 9 shooting. He went to the bench midway through the third quarter, which should give him plenty of energy for the championship on Saturday. Austin Reeves scored 19 points for the Lakers. Anthony Davis added 16 points and 15 rebounds. And Taurean Prince finished with 15 points. Trey Murphy III led the Pelicans with 14 points, and Zion Williamson added 13 points. In other NBA news, Knicks draw short end of tourney stick. Julius Randle pointed around the room like a game show host teasing the day's next prize. Only there wasn't a prize, at least not for the New York Knicks, just a lopsided schedule courtesy of the NBA's new in-season tournament. The Knicks will now play 42 games on the road and 40 at home, instead of 41 apiece. The two extra road games come against championship contenders. The Knicks already lost one to the Bucks by 24 points in Milwaukee on Tuesday, and are set to travel to Boston to face the Celtics on Friday, a team they have already lost to twice this season. The Knicks will play the Bucks and Celtics 5 times each, as opposed to the normal maximum serving of 4 games against conference foes. To make matters worse, the 2 games added to the schedule are on the road, and Boston in particular is known for its home court advantage. "We got 5 games versus both," Randle said after practice on Thursday. "What do you want me to say? That's bull..." Well, I can't say that. "What can we do about it? That's just the way it went." Also, Bulls. Guard Zach LaVine could be sidelined through the rest of December due to inflammation in his right foot. The team said Wednesday night that the 2-time All-Star will need 3 to 4 more weeks of rehab. LaVine, who is averaging 21 points in 18 games this season and has been the topic of recent trade speculation, has missed 3 straight games. The Bulls are 3-0 in that span. And the stat of the day, 29-10-10. Luka Doncic recorded 29 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists in the first half of Dallas' win over Utah on Wednesday. He is the first player with a triple-double of at least 25 points in a half since play-by-play tracking started in 1996 and 97. And now we switch to NHL news. Sharks spoil Kane's Red Wings debut. From Detroit, Mikhail Granlund scored 37 seconds into overtime, and the San Jose Sharks overcame a 4-goal deficit to defeat the Red Wings 6-5 on Thursday, spoiling Patrick Kane's debut with Detroit. Kane, who signed a 1-year contract with the Red Wings on November 28th, did not record a point in the game. Sabres 3, Bruins 1. Devin Levi made 30 saves and Buffalo won in Boston to snap a 4-game skid. Brad Marchand scored for the Bruins. He also had his 1,000th career penalty. Stars 5, Capitals 4 in SO. Second overtime. Roop Hintz scored twice in the third and Dallas rallied for a shootout win in Washington. The Capitals' Alex Ovechkin recorded his 1,500th career point. Pardon me, that was not second overtime, that was a shootout. Kings 4, Canadiens 0. Quentin Byfield had 2 goals and an assist. Cam Talbot earned the shutout, and Los Angeles beat Montreal for its record 11th road win to open the season. Lightning 5, Predators 1. Ryan McDonagh and Roman Josi each had a goal and an assist. Juuse Saros made 32 saves, and host Nashville beat Tampa Bay. Maple Leafs 4, Senators 3. Joseph Woll made 29 saves before leaving because of an injury midway through the third, and Toronto held on in Ottawa. Islanders 7, Blue Jackets 3. Matthew Barzal and Bo Horvat each scored twice, leading New York over visiting Columbus. Blackhawks 1, Ducks 0. Peter Mrazek recorded his 25th career shutout as Chicago beat visiting Anaheim to stop a 4-game slide. Flyers 4, Coyotes 1. Travis Konechny scored 2 goals, Carter Hart made 25 saves, and Philadelphia snapped host Arizona's 5-game winning streak. Jets 4, Avalanche 2. Connor Hellebuyck made 32 saves, leading Winnipeg over host Colorado for his 250th career victory. Kyle Connor scored twice. Flames 3, Hurricanes 2. Blake Coleman had a short-handed goal and an assist, and Calgary rallied to defeat visiting Carolina. Coleman scored the go-ahead goal for the Flames at 11 minutes and 44 seconds of the third. Canucks 2, Wild nothing. Casey DeSmith recorded his 10th career shutout, and Vancouver handed visiting Minnesota its first loss since Don Hines took over. In other NHL news, team comes first for Wild's Zuccarello from Vancouver, British Columbia. Mats Zuccarello was one of the last players to leave the ice at a recent Minnesota practice. After ditching his helmet and sitting at his stall in the almost empty locker room, Zuccarello began to discuss the Wild. Zuccarello explained the effect winning has had on the group since it shed a 7-game skid, how the mood has improved, and how everyone is smiling. That helps a lot for team spirit, he said. Zuccarello is a big reason for Minnesota's turnaround. He is the Wild's leading scorer and entered Thursday's game on a 10-game point streak and 8-game assist streak. Zuccarello is on track to have the most productive season of his NHL career, but he prefers to keep the focus on the team. I don't really need you to write anything about me, Zuccarello said. I'm okay with coming to the rink, having fun, and winning games. Other than that, I like the other young guys and good guys to get the attention. Zuccarello isn't usually singled out. He's Kirill Kaprizov's wingman, one-third of the Wild's top line, and a segment of Minnesota's veteran core, including one of three to sign a contract extension before the start of the season. But he's alone in the spotlight right now because of his performance. I don't think he knows how much influence he has on our team, winger Marcus Foligno said. He is a very big engine for us. And finally, the stat of the day, 11. Zach Hyman recorded a hat trick on Wednesday to help Edmonton beat the Carolina Hurricanes. Hyman has scored 11 goals in his last 10 games. In PGA news, Rahm bolts PGA for LIV. Doug Ferguson reports, Masters champion John Rahm bolted for Saudi-funded LIV Golf on Thursday for what's believed to be more money than the PGA Tour's entire prize fund, a stunning blow that deepens the divide in golf as the two sides were negotiating a commercial deal. Rahm confirmed the move in an interview with Fox News. Wearing a black Letterman's jacket with the LIV logo, he said it was not an easy decision. I've been very happy, Rahm said, but there's a lot of things that LIV Golf has to offer that were very enticing. He said he would keep private how much the deal was worth amid reports that put his compensation in the $500 million range, which likely would include equity in his new team. The PGA Tour's total purse in 2023 was about $460 million. The development comes 25 days before the deadline for the PGA Tour and Saudi Arabia's Public Investment Fund tried to finalize their June 6th agreement to become commercial partners in a for-profit enterprise, along with the European Tour. Talks have been going slowly, and Tiger Woods said last week there were a lot of moving parts. The biggest moving part turned out to be the 29-year-old Rahm, the number three player in the world and a two-time major champion approaching his prime, being the latest to defect. Rahm had been adamant that he has enough money and that he cares only about history and legacy. He recently said he laughed whenever he saw his name linked to LIV. It was a great offer. The money is great, obviously it's wonderful, Rahm said. But what I said before is true. I do not play golf for the money. I play golf for the love of the game and for the love of golf. But as a husband, as a father, and as a family man, I have a duty to my family to give them the best opportunities and the most amount of resources possible, and that is where that comes in. He remains eligible for the majors for the next 5 years, the Masters for life, the U.S. Open until 2031. Still to be determined is how the move affects his eligibility for the Ryder Cup. It's hard to sit here and criticize John because of what a great player he is, Rory McIlroy said in an interview with Sky Sports. John is going to be in Bethpage in 2025 for the Ryder Cup. Because of this decision, the European Tour is going to have to rewrite the rules. There's no question about that. Rahm's addition gives LIV Golf 7 of the last 14 winners at the majors. LIV Golf is here to stay, Lawrence Burian, the COO of LIV Golf, said in a news release sent out after Rahm's appearance on Fox News. And finally, this story from Major League Baseball. Yankees make vintage Steinbrenner move by getting Soto. From New York. Juan Soto's arrival is a sign the New York Yankees want stars to help them rebound from their worst season in three decades, a move right out of late owner George Steinbrenner's playbook. We certainly want to try under the Steinbrenner leadership to make this the mecca of baseball, General Manager Brian Cashman said Thursday, a day after acquiring the three-time All-Star outfielder from San Diego in a seven-player trade. George Steinbrenner always felt that the best players in the world should play here for the New York Yankees. Hal Steinbrenner and Jenny and Jessica have continued those efforts, Cashman added, referring to the controlling owner's sisters. Juan Soto is the latest example of that, of their efforts to try to bring the greatest, most talented baseball players the world can provide to play and call home here in the Bronx. New York also got Gold Glove center fielder Trent Grisham in exchange for right-handed pitchers Michael King, Johnny Brito, Randy Vasquez, and Drew Thorpe, along with catcher Kyle Higashioka. Soto, who turned 25 in October, hit .275 with 35 homers, 109 RBIs, and a .930 OPS in his only full season with the Padres, and joins a batting order that includes Aaron Judge. Cashman liked pairing Soto with Judge likened pairing Soto with Judge to a card game. In other stories, Kimbrel hopes to help O's reach playoffs again. Craig Kimbrel expressed a bit of urgency after joining the Baltimore Orioles. They want to win, and they want to win now. I don't know how many more years I got to do this and go out there and sling the ball, the 35-year-old closer said Thursday. I want to be a part of a winner. I want to be part of a great opportunity and be comfortable doing it. After winning 101 games and an AL East title, the Orioles are now a reasonable destination for any free agent hoping for an immediate shot at the postseason. And for a reliever like Kimbrel, the opportunities go beyond that. After closer Felix Bautista had Tommy John surgery, Baltimore had a significant need in the bullpen, one that the Orioles tried to fill by acquiring Kimbrel on a $13 million one-year deal. Bautista had 33 saves and a 1.48 ERA last season, but did not pitch after August 25th. Astros. Houston and free agent catcher Victor Caratini finalized a $12 million two-year contract. A switch hitter, the 30-year-old Caratini spent the last two seasons with the Milwaukee Brewers and batted .259 with seven homers, 25 RBIs, and a .711 OPS in 62 games. This year, as William Contreras' backup. He committed only one error and did not have a passed ball in 58 games behind the plate. Reds. According to an AP source, Jaime Candelario agreed to a $45 million three-year contract with Cincinnati, giving the Reds a surplus of infielders that could lead to another move. Candelario batted .251 with 22 homers and 70 RBIs in 140 games this past season. And finally, the Nationals. Nick Senzel agreed to a $2 million one-year contract with Washington, according to an AP source. Senzel was the number two pick in the 2016 amateur draft and spent his first five major league seasons with Cincinnati. And that does it for this reading of the Sioux City Journal for Friday, December 8th. I'm your reader, Mark Bedford. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thanks for listening.